Funny thing, watching gods realize they've been mortal all along.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that rates and reviews Book Talk and Bookstagram's most popular books and tells you whether or not you should take the time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. And today we are reading a fantasy dystopian novel that is actually a little bit older, but has gotten this second life thanks to TikTok. And it's becoming really popular again. And lots of people are reading it and lots of people are loving it. So it is Red Rising by Pierce Brown, originally published in 2014. The book follows main character Darrow, who is basically a miner on Mars, and they live underground. Mars isn't safe for, you know, the atmosphere and everything isn't safe, but they are told that him and his community are mining this substance that will help make Mars livable. So yeah, they're very isolated and they have these overlords called the Golds. So the main character is part of the Reds. The society is divided up by colors, and then those people have features that correspond with the colors. So like Darrow has red hair and red eyes, and then the Golds who lord over them have like gold hair, gold eyes. And so the Reds are basically like the slaves of this society. They hardly have anything. They're super impoverished. And they are supposed to compete with other Red tribes to be the most productive so that they can get more privileges like medicine. So it's a pretty brutal lifestyle. It's very like Hunger Games-esque, like District 13 type thing, where it's like a very impoverished community. And there's a lot of violence against the citizens who live there. This is a really long description, but the setup of this book is really long. So basically, Darrow is married. They, you know, get married young, die young, and he loves his wife so much. Events happen. She ends up dying, and this leads to this sort of like political awakening of his because she wanted him to fight back against their oppressors. And the journey kind of takes off from there. He ends up living in Gold Society, and I don't want to spoil anything because there's lots of twists and turns, but he ends up in this sort of like fight to the death-ish competition, and it's very complicated. So
this book is a lot, and a lot of setup and a lot of just minute details that are important.
Yes.
The way I've described it to someone is it starts kind of Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
Has this like brief touch of like some Percy Jackson,
mm-hmm.
and a good portion of like the Will of the Many, but yes. Then goes like really feral from there.
Yes. Game of Thrones.
That like, was another one. I was like, I know Game there was another Thrones. One. It's Game of Thrones for like 2/3 of the book.
Yeah. Yes. It's like every super good, super popular fantasy mixed together into its own thing. Like super unique, also super brutal. So we will probably introduce some trigger warnings later in the episode. Because there are some really fucking dark parts of this book, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we do that, do you guys have reviews?
Yeah. The one-star reviews left me disappointed. I thought they would be more fun, but they were kind of just like boring and like people just like DNF. I couldn't handle it. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. You couldn't handle it. Anyway, I found a 2-star review that I thought was funny. And I'm just going to read the first part of it. And it says, initial reaction, screams and throws book across the room. What the fuck was I was supposed to love this? This was supposed to be as good as the author's face.
He's
gorgeous.
The author is stunning. Like, especially after not to be rude, but most male fantasy authors are like sort of heinous looking. And he is
that
like
was so
that was diabolical. But
I said
so
not bad. To be rude, like it made it better, but it's just true. You know, tell me I'm wrong. I'm listening, I'm waiting, and I'm not. And so he really stands out. Like, he is very attractive. That's a funny review.
I have 3 different ones. So One of them made me chuckle based on something I've already said. 3 stars. I really wanted to be enamored by this book like everyone else seems to be. Reader, I was not. Go read The Will of the Many instead.
Shit.
And then I have 2 more. 5 stars. I haven't read a boy book in a while, so the sentence structure caught me off guard for the start. However, bloody damn brilliant. Gagged, sat, and ready to rise. Bloody damn is a word they use in the book a lot. And then there's a 4.5 star, and it just says, I could go fight a war right now.
Yeah.
Yes. I second all of that stuff, especially the boy fantasy stuff. Also, random note, there are a lot of reviews that say, like, you know, finally took another stab at this book, or like second read, third read attempt. And so I do feel like part of the reason this book is having such a second life is much like Avatar: The Last Airbender, the political moment that we're in this country, because there were a lot of reviews where people were like, I don't know, this book just didn't resonate with me. And then I picked it back up and like, holy shit, it was so amazing. So definitely heavy political vibes.
I also popular now because thanks to TikTok, the girls have got a hold of it.
Yes.
The boys don't talk about their books as much. The girlies will ride or die for your book if it's good.
Boys, yes. Start talking about your books.
I know. Well, and if they're actually good, we'll read them. Okay.
Yeah. Don't gatekeep the cool fantasy.
Yeah. Okay. I have 2 reviews. One is a 4-star review, which I really related to. Morally gray main characters are out. Morally black main characters are in and fun.
Period.
Uh-huh.
And then I have a 2nd one, which is just for the girls, because I feel like it's very us and very our podcast. But 5 stars. Yes, finally obsessed. So excited. I thought I'd never feel this way about a book after Throne of Glass.
Period. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, most of the internet agrees with our good reviews. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.3 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.6 out of 5. So it's pretty high.
High.
Mm-hmm. Do y'all agree?
Yeah.
No. 5 stars, not 4.6.
You're right. 5 stars, not 4.6. Period.
Yes. Yeah, I freaking loved this book. If you like The Will of the Many, it'll scratch an itch for you.
Mm-hmm.
This may be one of my all-time favorite books now. I like gravitate towards fantasy books naturally, but I find that when you have me list out like my top 10 favorite books, a lot of them are like sci-fi or sci-fi fantasy crossovers. They're just like, mm-hmm. I love a book that I can't predict.
Mm-hmm.
And these are ones I cannot predict and are so complicated in the best way and such like fascinating political commentary.
Yep.
This was the first time in a long time I've been at work thinking, oh, I really want to go home and read my book.
Yes. I would be at appointments and literally just be like, I just need to get through this hour so that I can actually read this fucking book and finish it. Cause I think I was like 30 pages from the end and I had to go to an appointment. And I was like, I am so mad right now because I just want to finish it.
Yeah. Did you guys say what you actually rated the book?
Yeah.
5 stars.
5 stars. Okay. I also rated it 5 stars.
Wow.
You know, I think this book has actually.
Guys, this is like so rare. Take a moment to bask in this.
Yeah. To really think about it. I think this book might have displaced The Fifth Season as my favorite fantasy book. Like,
wow.
I genuinely loved it so much. It's definitely one of my favorite books of all time. I'm not sure I've ever read a book that I thought was so unparalleled in quality. It gave me that feeling of like, it was exciting. The writing was great. The characters were all super complicated. And like, I think one of my biggest complaints in modern fantasy is that authors don't make their main characters make hard choices and do hard things. And this book is like the peak, making the characters adapt, making the
only
characters
only hard things.
Yeah.
No easy outs ever. And it makes it so good because you just see this character like making mistakes and then constantly having to like think of something, an actual smart solution. Like, it's just nothing in this book is easy, and that made it so good. And so, and it's also the perfect parallel of like a gun mentioned in the first act goes off by the fourth act. Like, mm-hmm. every single detail in this book matters. Like, to me, this is, like, truly sublime fantasy.
And what you said about Fifth Season is interesting, because that also is that fantasy sci-fi intersection. And yes. I feel like that's just the genre that, like, always is the sweet spot really? For me if it's done well.
Well, I think it's because modern day fantasy, just true fantasy, especially romantasy, is following the same formulaic structure because they know it works. They know that they'll get the easy bucks from it. But right. this is hard. This is hard.
I want to be write. Surprised.
Yes. Yeah. This kind of stuff is incredibly hard, especially sci-fi fantasy, because sci-fi, you have to add in actual scientific things yes. to it in order for it to make sense. Because yeah. like they can't be living on Mars just easily. You have to terraform it in order for it to live. And that's the whole crux of the story, is terraforming Mars. And it's very interesting seeing how, like, it talks about evolution. It talks about human political structures and sociology and, like, how people become certain things. And so, like, it is hard to write a story with unique political systems, unique planetary systems, and just unique, like, characters and human evolution. Like, this is the peak of true sci-fi fantasy.
I would also say I like to read books by people who are smarter than me. So, like, yeah. this one, The Will of the Many, Project Hail Mary. Like, I'm not thinking of these things. You've kept me on my toes. Break it down. Explain it to me. You know, like, I enjoy romantasy because I think it's, like, a comfort spot, because I know what's going to happen. Oh, you got me on my toes. You have to break it. Like, if you have to explain it yes. to me, I can't stop reading.
Right. And this book has twists on twists. Like, it is so many unexpected directions. Every character is important, not just the main character. I had a lot of similar thoughts. Now that we're talking about, like, the sci-fi fantasy mix of it all, I do agree. I think one of the most important things that I have really picked on modern fantasy for is also just, like, pulling things out of your ass. Like, a magic system that just has random holes in it where things change at the last minute and it feels convenient. If you're writing sci-fi, there's normally some scientific basis or thought out process for why things work the way they do. And I think it helps authors, like, not do that sort of, like, convenience pull at the last minute, because they have a very well established, like, logic for how everything works. And so, yeah, I mean, I thought it was great. And I think it also helps that you have to think, in fantasy, you can just create a world from scratch, which is great to read and really fun to read. Sci-fi is more so like human civilization somehow got to this point, like we're at some sort of identified point in the future. And Catherine, like you said, I think that helps them think about what happened to the politics, what happened to the world to make this world conceivable. And I think that helps it also be a lot more, like, fleshed out and three-dimensional.
Yeah.
But... you know, guys, we all fucking loved it.
Yeah, that's rare. Very, very rare.
Okay. And it's a boy book.
Ugh. Yes, I hate that it's a boy book. I have some small critiques based on it being a boy fantasy yes. that we can get into later. But in general, I was so sad that one of my favorite books is written by a man.
I'll also say, boys love this book, girls read it. Turns out my brother-in-law was reading this at the same time as me, and we've bonded over it. Also, I was talking to a man on Hinge, and we got in the books. He's like, have you read Red Rising? And I was like, I'm reading it right now. Let's talk. So,
Oh my goodness.
You can learn how to speak with men in your life if you read this book, because they're reading it too.
Actually, so I'm the last person in my family to read this book. Almost all my other family members read this book at the recommendation of my dad. So,
wow.
Yep. And they were really excited that I was finally reading it, because my dad got my whole family addicted to the series.
Yeah.
So, also, if a book is good, stop marketing it only to men. Okay.
Yeah.
We want to read it too.
Okay.
I will. Book Talk girlies are helping them.
Book Talk girlies are seriously helping them. Also, this book didn't help itself on its first cover edition. Have you seen the photos from this first cover? They're horrifying.
They're literally so bad. I did see them because I was Googling this book and I was like, oh my God.
It's like a man with a human skull as he's being surgically, like, put on. I'm like, this is horrifying.
I didn't actually see that. Okay. Gross.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I passed this book in Barnes and Noble when it had that original cover. And I was like, What the fuck is that?
I do want to say, kind of on the strain we've been talking about, maybe the girlies are bored with the common fantasy plots we're getting because we're also seeing a surge in like Brandon Sanderson and some of these other like traditional, like Wheel of Time is coming up a lot. Like some of these traditionally kind of boy sci-fi fantasy mega series. And girls are less intimidated by those now. I mean, I've always liked the thicker the book, the better. But a lot of girls are not like that. And so it's been interesting. The Will of the Many, you know, like stuff's getting really popular. And I think maybe the girlies are looking for something different.
I agree with that take. And I think, you know, female authors also write books like this, but have been pigeonholed into one genre and one, you know, formula for success. So I'm hoping they let women write more really complicated, heart-wrenching stories like this.
Like The Fifth Season. That's a woman.
Exactly. Who had to self-publish, by the way, which is insane because that book is so fucking good. Anyway, let's get back to our actual non-spoiler discussion. If you guys can't tell, we're so excited. But anyway, so is this book more plot or character-driven?
Okay, so it starts kind of plot. Mm-hmm. But I would say the last two thirds are very character driven. Yes. Because at first stuff's just kind of happening to him. But then Darrow finds himself like amongst the enemy and starts making decisions for himself. And it gets really interesting when it's character driven. Not that it already wasn't interesting, but like it gets really complicated and muddy in such a fun way.
Yeah. The first like a third of the book is all plot. Because it's just Darrow finding out what the world truly is and trying to conform to it. But then the last two thirds is kind of a mix of character and plot because there's moments where people are outside forces are trying to stop him and like rig things. But he's the one reacting to it because then he's suddenly in power and he sees this power. And because of his status as a Red and because of where he grew up, he knows how to game the system better because he experienced the system's brutality. And everyone around him lived very cushy lives, experienced no misery, no trouble. So it's very interesting to see the two, like, different people.
Right. I agree with you guys. Definitely, like, the main character is, like, very not in control for the first third of the book. But then in the last part of the book, it's all, like, him growing and him figuring out how to sort of win this game and rise in society. And so that is pretty much all like sociology and his own character growth that like helps him get there. So it was very interesting to read. Have you / would you read other books by the author?
I have the next one on hold.
Yes, I'm going to get the next one for sure.
Yes. My brother-in-law has already blown through the second one and is like, yep, keep reading.
Yeah, I have heard. That's another thing. Okay, so I haven't actually read the rest of the series, so obviously I can't give my own opinion. But my sister and my dad have said that every book in this series is as good as the first one, which is incredibly rare. It starts out as a trilogy, and then the author has since added books. So I think you can read the first three just as like a complete set. And I'm not totally sure. I think the other books might be in the same universe, but not necessarily the same timeline. So, there is more, which I've heard are also very good. And I am so pampered because my whole family has already read this series that they're all uploaded on Kindle. And I am so excited to read the next ones.
Oh, you're so lucky. Oh my God. But yeah, isn't it so refreshing to have a complete series already out so we don't have to wait for the next one to come out?
Yeah. James Islington, I have to wait till for The Will of the Money till November. And that was like long after it came out. So
yes.
Write faster if you're going to give us
half. No, you don't want them that. You don't want
crazy
that.
Series. No.
No. Yeah.
Or maybe just like write them all first and then slowly release it.
Okay. This is so the pacing of the book. This is one of the few things I have a slight critique on. The first third of the book, I actually did find pretty boring. The first section is like when Darrow is in the mines and they're kind of setting up the world. after I read the whole book, I do agree that that time is necessary. I don't think there's anything you could have really cut out because it does set up the central conflict so well. But I did not find the first probably 150 pages of the book super interesting. Like I read it, but I wasn't super like page turning, like super invested. But after it hits this turning point when like Darrow enters this competition, and after that, I was like, hooked, like could not look away. I read it so fast. I could not stop thinking about it. But I did think the first part of the book was slow.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to set up for Dan.
Yeah.
And I think Caitlin, when we were chatting about this last week before the podcast, you said something that definitely resonated where it's just like you read 80 pages and that took 2 hours. Like it's a slow start and it takes a while to get into a pace for this book because there is no skimming. You cannot skim this book because you will not understand what is happening because too much is happening on a page.
Lots of new vocab introduced as well.
At the same time, though, while I was dismayed that it took me so long to read 80 to 100 pages, I didn't care. I found the whole thing interesting. I understand it's a little daunting probably for some people, which will affect the busy girl writing when we get there. But as someone who loves a big complicated book, like I was sat for the whole thing. I think I read it over like 3 days, 3 different sittings. Like I just wanted to sit down and read it in huge chunks because there wasn't ever a point, even if it was like a bit slower, where I was like, I'm not interested in what's coming next. Like I had to keep reading no matter what because everything was interesting to me.
Right. Okay. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
This would be a really good television show.
Yeah.
Like, why'd we make Dune into a movie?
Yeah, this is so much better.
I agree. I feel like we did not need that. As a society, our resources have not been allocated appropriately.
Well, considering Dune had already been done and we just redid it.
Right.
Yeah.
Just with Timothy Chalamet.
And Zendaya. We do love Zendaya.
I do love Zendaya. Timothy Chalamet's overrated. Sorry.
Still, I read that book too. Didn't like it. Not fun.
Oh, well. Okay. Well, that brings us to our busy girl rating.
I'll give it a 4 because that's as low as I can go with this book because it is not for the faint of heart. And I think you have to have an interest in both sci-fi and fantasy. Also, I think if you're a Percy Jackson girly, you're very much so love this book because
this is like the most violent iteration of Percy Jackson.
I know, but like my knowledge of the gods, both Greek and Roman, very much so helped me in this book. My Latin basis very much so helped me. This is just further proof that men are obsessed with the Roman Empire because a man wrote a book about the Roman Empire on Mars. So
yeah,
it's true. Yeah. I don't know. I'll agree with your 4. I'm tempted to give it a 3 just because like I know it's not everybody's cup of tea. Yeah, this is a hard one for a lot of people. I think if you like this kind of stuff, home run. But if you don't, big fail. Big fail.
But it's not a like super long book. It's only like max
350. No, but because of how long it took me to read and how complicated the world and some of the vocabulary is, that's where I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I will just give it a 3.
Hot take. Well, I'm going to give it a 5. I literally don't care. I literally don't care. Everyone should read this book. I think a book this good, that's also not super long. Like every page is worth it. You truly get like every interaction matters. Every character matters. I feel like that's something I value really highly is like your time and the time you spend on it is not wasted at all. And it's so good. I think it's probably like among the best fantasy reads you could possibly pick up. So I think it's worth your time. Like, I just think this book is so worth it. And it's pretty short. So to me, this is a busy girl 5.
Well, pretty short for us who reads 800 page stuff.
Okay. If you can't read a 350, 380 page book, like, it's time to go back to picture books. Like, this is...
I feel like this one doesn't read like a 350-page book.
No,
it reads much longer.
It reads longer. It does read longer. I still think it's worth it. I think it's a 5.
Okay. We average out to a 4. I think that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that's probably how, like, most regular people would interpret this book.
Yeah.
Oh, let's do trigger warnings before we do the next part.
Rape. Rape.
Big trigger for rape.
Slavery.
Murder. Lots of murder.
Yeah.
Pretty much you name it, it's involved.
Death of a spouse, grief. Mm-hmm. It's like, if any of those things sound concerning to you, I would definitely check out a more exhaustive list online before you read it. Because also, it's not like these things are just mentioned in the background. They're very much at the heart of some parts of the story, and it gets very dark and very intense. So, yeah, approach that with caution. Now that that's out of the way, spoiler alert section, let's get into it, guys. What did you think of the world, and how about the caste system, which corresponds to different colors? Golds on top, reds on bottom.
I was enthralled by all of the caste systems and the world. Even when we were in the mines, I thought it was very unique in how they would pit the lowest caste, the low reds, against each other to vie for the top spot just to get some little extra food rations and some medicine. And they rigged that to where only one will always win so that everyone else would hate the top group. Because it's just like, it is a brilliant case study in democracy and in like political systems, because this does happen. Like, people in power, if they want to stay in power, they have to, especially if they're not the majority, they have to pit the minorities against each other so that they don't all collectively come together and overthrow the top. And that's where you have like things like the French Revolution, where before that, they were all separated by their own prejudices and biases. But then once they realized that it was all class warfare and it was low, like peasants versus royalty, that's when they came together. And it was a very bloody, violent revolution. But it was because of the complete inequities of the system. And so I found it very interesting, because that's a case study on how you can keep your power. And it was very interesting. I still have questions about like how evolution happened to where like there is these reds and like everyone's like born with the different color eyes, the different color hair, mm-hmm. like all of that. It made sense because like you could see it kind of happening. But at the same time, I'm like, how are golds made? Because like golds are so much stronger. They're so much faster. They can see things differently. Like, they are literally peak human. Like, they are evolved Homo sapiens. And I'm like,
there's been some like genetic breeding. And yeah, they talk about like how some races, like the obsidians, have more fingers and stuff.
Right.
I don't know. This is your classic knowledge is power.
Yes.
Whoever holds the power is in charge. And that's a theme we get in a lot of these sci-fi books. I also want to point out how I saw this TikTok, because I'm on Red Rising TikTok. you'll notice that all of the golds he talks about have like an AU between their names. So it's like Cassius Albalona.
Mm-hmm.
Well, AU is the chemical symbol for gold. And I guess in the rest of the series, like, it will be like so-and-so ag whatever for silver and so-and-so Q whatever for copper. Like, the periodic table is even involved in this color naming. It's very complex.
I did not think of
really
that.
Fun way. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't catch that either.
I would TikTok to tell me, because we obviously haven't read much outside of red and gold, but.
Right. I would definitely anticipate that coming up more in future books. I also wonder, because this like society they're in is like now spread across the universe and has conquered different solar systems and stuff, that there's perhaps even some, like, you know, breeding with other life forms. Like, you know, there could just be so many different parts of this now that, you know, the influence of other societies. But yeah, I thought the world was super interesting. It was really, really fleshed out and thought out. Did you guys see it coming when Darrow learns that actually the Mars has already been colonized?
Yeah, because it was on the back jacket.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
I didn't read anything about this. I like to go into books you'll find blissfully unaware of what's going on. I don't read summaries like ever. I did not know. I figured there was a secret being kept, but that was like a really good plot twist for someone who is ignorant like me.
I almost wish that I didn't read the back jacket, so I was surprised when it happened because I wouldn't have predicted it. But then because it was on the back jacket, I predicted it.
It's interesting because you just spend so much time with him in the beginning, like, oh man, the other like clan beat them out. And there's this like hierarchy system in these like mines. And then you realize there are like thousands and thousands of these mines just like it, but all underneath an actual thriving civilization. And they're just the bottom layer, the tip of the iceberg. And you're like, oh my God.
They're bringing bread and then labor and beyond, ignorant.
Right. Beyond that, they're on all the planets and moons. And then beyond that, on like Earth's moon, there's the people who rule all of them. You're like, oh wow. Like it makes you feel how big it truly is, which was like a really impressive thing to do.
Yes. So I did guess it because I've read multiple books that have had this sort of plot twist and I was really proud of myself. However, I thought they were going to be on Earth and they only like told them it was Mars. So it was, you know, they were just still on Mars, but Mars is like fully settled and colonized and they're just still being used as slaves. But no, I thought it was a great world. I thought it was super politically sound and that everything that you learn in the beginning with the Reds comes back during the competition where all the Golds fight each other. Because the same way they made Reds the bottom of the total pyramid, they also had Reds who are above other Reds. And now, even among Golds, there are Golds who are above other Golds. And this whole book is about teaching the Golds what happens if they don't have power, basically, so they excuse all the moral, just all the morality of, like, enslaving other people.
Hierarchies within hierarchies.
Yeah.
You're all like fighting for top rung.
Teaching them that they need to be on the top rung or other people could treat them as less than and they could not have power. And it's there's nothing more important than having power.
Yeah. Well, and also they mention, and it's very true, it's that these people have grown up with privilege. And if they had stayed that way and stayed ignorant, it would lead to the fall of their society because you truly do become harder and stronger when you face trials and tribulations. You cannot grow if you do not face failure and do not face any sort of struggle. And so that's why they have this institute that forges them by fire and forges them by death and by slavery and by all these things so that they realize in this mini scale the power that they have to keep. And so if they didn't have this institute, it would be much like, as I say, the French Revolution, where you have Marie Antoinette and the king, let them eat cake and being very like boisterous about their wealth and not realizing everyone else around them hates them.
Right? I'll also say one of my favorite twists in the book is you get this whole hierarchy built up and you're like, wow, this is such a strong hierarchy. How are they ever going to change this? And then you find out Darrow is not the only Red who has been made into a
yes.
book. And you're like,
it's another thing I was wondering about the whole time.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, like if two of them are on the inside in the highest echelons of society, like how close is this society to actually crumbling?
Yeah.
Right. I actually, my guess was Sevro. And early on in the book, I was like, I bet Sevro's a Red, which did not end up being true. But, you know, now we know that there are other Reds and we have a reason every time.
And who knows what other colors?
Right. Could be even farther spread. We have no idea if Darrow is the first person to successfully, the first Red who's masquerading as a Gold to like make it out of the competition or not. Like we don't have any information on that. And I'm really excited to learn.
Well, because it requires a Gold's mind. That's the main issue, is that you can change the body, but you can't change the mind. You can try and like mold the mind, but like you have to have a sharp enough intellect already as a base layer. And that's why Darrow succeeded so well, is because he's got a mind better than the Golds. Like he is smarter than everyone else there because he's experienced struggle his entire life. And he did
like the only job that required like smart, like sophisticated intelligence in his colony.
Problem solving.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also liked how the uprising was looking for Reds who weren't necessarily the strongest or the fastest, but wanted to fight back. And how, you know, you had to have the mental, the intelligence and the mental capabilities, but you also had to have that like spirit within you that you weren't.
That's my other question. What's his uncle up to? Because that's how he got plugged in. I'm like, what else is going on underground?
Yeah. It makes me feel like he's faking being drunk.
It's like, it kind of puts you on edge a little bit, not in like a like suspenseful way, but you're kind of like, we can see all these little workings of like revolutionaries, even if they're not all working together. So it's like, what is really festering underneath everything, and how easy is it to topple?
Right. Because it's not just their Red colony either. It's Red colonies across the universe that, you know, the uprising is working on, kind of stoking these flames. And it's like, in Darrow's planet, they were still, they seemed pretty under control, which I think is another thing that builds that tension, is on its surface, it looked like everyone was obeying and that there was no hope for them and no one was doing anything. And then that illusion shatters when Darrow ends up being taken and we realize his uncle was a part of the uprising somehow and his dad was probably a part of the uprising somehow.
And a little song about hanging can spark a revolution. Heard that one before.
Yeah.
Barry's Hunger Games.
Nod to the Hunger Games.
Yes.
Okay. So the inciting incident for Darrow is that his wife, I've been pronouncing her name Io, but who knows?
I think Io's right. Yeah.
She ends up being hung because she, you know, is basically wants them to she wants the Reds to fight back. Darrow and her end up being whipped and she sings this forbidden song and they hang her. And then Darrow gets in trouble because he buries her body and they're not allowed to be buried, which is also very interesting. And I feel like we'll come back and become more important in some way. So what did you guys think of that incident and how that sets up his journey against the Golds?
I've seen several TikToks that are like, wow, Io and Darrow are so in love. And then like it cuts and they're like sobbing on the couch because you get set up this such like idyllic little thing where he's kind of like, my life is fine. Why would I want to change it? You know, like my wife is restless, but I am not. I am living out my purpose. I'm top dog on the mining crew. So you have to have such a dramatic inciting incident to get him to think differently. And he almost still doesn't. His uncle kind of forces him into his role, but I don't know, it was like sad and gut-wrenching, even though you knew it was gonna happen, like I knew. But it was like perfect. I don't know,
I mean, one of the most gut-wrenching parts is the fact that like he has to complete the killing because Mars's gravity is not the same as Earth. So you have to literally pull the person down in order to find them. And I'm like, that's horrifying. Oh my
God. Heart-wrenching.
And then his uncle does it wrong for him. And so that he's still alive. And that's very interesting. And I thought that whole conversation with the guy from the Son of Ares, I found it very interesting that he was like, vengeance is like nothing. You need to have like drive. You can complete your vengeance whenever, but like we need you to be better than that. We need you to override your rage in order to become what you can be. Because like one vengeance against one Gold is like cutting off the head of a Hydra. It just is going to grow back. You need to break down the whole system in order for it to never come back again.
Yep. Right. And I also liked the way she saw things, and I sort of appreciated the commentary on martyrs because we've read a few books now that have commentary about martyrs and martyrdom. And they talk about how martyrs are symbols, but they're not revolutionaries. They're the people that your heart cries the most for, that you feel the most empathy for, that are able to stir up those feelings, but they're not necessarily people who can actually see a way out, who can actually like lead a revolution.
Yep. Io's the martyr, but she's dead. She can't change anything else now.
And I thought it was really interesting that Io seemed, it made me question her possible involvement with the uprising, because she seemed to know her role and knew that Darrow's love for her is what would keep him in line, because he would not do anything to jeopardize her safety.
I think she sacrificed herself for it.
I think it was all a plan, which makes me sadder for him, but...
Yeah.
Right.
Well, because she... Like, how would they know to hack into the footage in order to broadcast it all over Mars? Because it was...
Yeah, and the governor just happened to be there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And his uncle just happened to know what to do to get him, you know, like, yeah, to where he needs... I don't know. Yeah, I feel like EO is in on it, and we... I don't know. Actually, I added this question to the end. I don't know if you two have seen it. What did EO say to her sister?
That's...
I'm so curious. I'm so...
I think she was pregnant.
That would be horrifying.
Yeah, but I hope it's not that. But
why would she tell her sister that?
I maybe feel like... to save, to tell Darrow when he needs some more rage in him. I'm curious.
I feel like there's something else.
Yeah, that's like where I'm like, maybe it was something else. Like, I planned this whole thing, you know?
Well, I feel like the sister knows more than she lets on.
Yeah, everybody but Darrow knows more than they...
Yeah, I'm very curious to see if he ever sees them again.
Yeah.
Because why would he? But also at the same time, he should.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it feels like probably not in the next book, but eventually in the series, there will be some kind of more meaningful active uprising, in which case some of these characters would have the opportunity to come back. But we'll see, because we don't know anything about that yet. Okay, so we've been talking about the uprising. They're called the Sons of Ares. What did you think of their work and how they transformed Darrow from red to gold?
Dangerous waters.
Yeah, they seem good, but they also seem very morally gray, because what they're doing is for a just cause, but there's something hidden underneath it, because he seems to think that the guy that he met, Dancer, is the Ares, but he won't admit it. So then that tells me that, like, he probably isn't Ares and there's someone else controlling this puppeteer. And revolutions and rebellion movements can be good and bad. I worry that they're going to create a revolution in order to put the Reds on top and then subjugate everyone else on bottom. So you're just reversing the tides. You're not actually, like, helping people. Because, I mean, these people have been brainwashed that democracy is, like, the most evil thing possible. So there's no way they're ever going to go to a democratic system of government.
Also, okay, I actually didn't think about this much before, but didn't Darrow's uncle pull his dad's feet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not dead.
Mm.
His uncle insists that he is, but that doesn't mean it's true.
True. Because he says, go meet my brother Dancer, or whatever, in the glen when he's dying.
So and Dancer could be his dad.
I'm not sure. Right. I feel like he would recognize his dad.
Everything changes because of the body modifications they're able to get. It complicates everything even more. Because you right, can
like maybe his yourself. Dad is actually like... Maybe one of Colonna's or something.
A gold knows? Somewhere now. Yeah. Like, you know, like, you never know.
Or he's dead, but...
Because they do insinuate that his dad was another martyr who just, like, died for the cause. But, again, we have no reason to, like, take everything they say at face value.
Right. And the fact that the Sons of Ares can convince the Purples to carve people and turn them into a different class and pluck eyes out of, you know, a different class to put on them makes you not trust anyone, especially the Sons of Ares. Yeah. So it's like, who is really who they say they are?
Well, the fact that they can kill so many golds in order to get these body parts to infuse into Darrow and Titus tells me that, like, the golds are not as impenetrable as you seem to think.
They talk about those pixies and bronzies too, which are just like not as pure gold. So it's like, are those who's being picked off, or like what's going on? What's happening on other planets? Are they coming from other planets? Like, I don't know.
Well, like, how is the golds not sound the alarm that so many of their own are dying?
Because they're so self-absorbed. They kill their kids on purpose.
Yes, they cull the herd.
They cull their like babies. That's crazy.
I know, but it was interesting to me. I think it felt true because the society had worked so hard to drive basically like class divide in between all these different groups of people. Catherine, like you said, so that they never banded together, that things were never bad enough for them, that they really felt like they needed to risk it all for revolution. But there's like a whole segment of people that are basically sex slaves and are forced to have sex with golds whenever golds want them. There's reds who are not miners, but are the servants in gold's houses, like
janitor.
So many kinds of people that have so little choice in the world that are also being abused and who it seems like may not even really understand what's happening with the reds in the mines. Like, it's really unclear what society has actually told all of these people.
Well, and I like, it's so funny because the golds seem to not be monitoring the violets who can carve people. Like, that's huge.
Artists
like,
are harmless. What are you talking about?
Yeah, like, I'm like, there's no way you can actually, if you're truly as smart as you think you are.
They're not. The greens are the smart ones.
You're right. But like, they pretend that they're like the top brass. But like, excuse me, like, why would you not be policing and regulating people who can literally carve flesh and make new people?
Who knows?
Lots of questions. And now that we're back to the outside world, maybe we'll get it.
Right. Okay, so enter the Institute, which is where all the best golds take a test. They get into the Institute, and then they have basically to brutalize each other in this competition. The first test is they have the top 50 golds basically fight to the death with the bottom 50 golds, hoping to cull out half of the crowd. Then they do the war games where there's all these different houses and they have to fight each other. And basically how the games are traditionally won is that one house enslaves all the other houses. Mm-hmm. So they've created these games to basically reaffirm that the only way to win and the best way for a society to be is the way golds have structured it in the outside world.
Yeah.
But Darrow flips that on its head.
Yeah, when you realize that it's not the top 1,000 kids who get into the Institute, it's the top 500 and the bottom 500, mm-hmm. so that their parents can still be proud they made it in, but in the end, they're just there to be cold. Like, it's crazy when you realize that, yeah. and that only just, like, sets the tone for everything else that happens. And then, like, you know, Darrow's very proud of himself. He's one of the top picks. He's a first draft. He's, like, very high on the list because he's very smart and he's proud of it.
Yes.
And it's really interesting that he goes into these war games like, actually, no, I am top shit here and I'm going to lead my house and we are going to win this game and I'm going to win everything. And you're like, whoa, dude, weren't you just like mining for whatever, like a few months ago? So it's kind of crazy, but also it like works.
It makes sense because he actually has experienced politics in its truest form.
He also has nothing to lose.
He has nothing to lose. And he has everything.
He has no family outside that's going to be disappointed when he becomes a slave or whatever. Like, no shame is going to come. He has nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose but the highest possible stakes, which is if I don't win, I cannot do anything to help my family, like, get free from slavery.
Yeah.
So I really, really liked his journey there just because, and again, like back to the thing, like this author makes his character make such hard choices and do such hard things, is Darrow is down so many times in this game. And part of the brilliance of this book is watching him have to rebuild himself and pick himself back up every time.
Yeah. Well, and a good portion of the time, he's down because of another red marauding as a gold. And you're like, once you realize that, you're like, oh, what the heck? Like, mm-hmm. you should be working together for the cause, but you can't.
Yeah. Right. Well, because they don't realize that they're both reds. Mm-hmm. And it shows you what Darrow could have become if vengeance had consumed him. Because Titus, mm-hmm. this is where rape comes in, rapes one of the golds who he enslaves because it was their family that hurt his family. He made it seem like that person's family, that gold's family, had directly caused trouble to Titus's family.
He was treating others how he thought he was being treated instead of playing along in order to blend in and achieve power that way. It was two different approaches, which was very well planned out and showed. And also, you wonder who else is secretly doing that.
Yes, it does. Because I think Titus ends up raping multiple of the girls and then allowing his sentinels to rape the girls. So it's like extremely dark. And I agree, like it shows that like he was ultimately no different than Ingold, because when he had the ability to have power, he chose to use it the same way Golds use it. And took revenge on people that really had nothing to do with what happened to him. Like, the daughters of these people are not the people who hurt the person you love. And so it was really interesting. I also really liked that you can see how corrupting the power is. Like, even with Darrow, he develops a sense of entitlement also, almost, where he's like, I know that I was born a red, but in this universe, I'm a gold. And I can't believe that they would not respect me, basically.
Well, and he fashions himself a god.
Yes. And he becomes so ascendant. And it's so interesting because in some ways, like, he's still true to his mission and does not become like too corrupted to the point that he's not true to the cause. But it also changes him so deeply to experience what it's like to be on top and to have everyone below you.
He's far less Darrow now, way more the Reaper.
Yes. And it's very interesting because he starts to play the games the way that the game makers want him to play. And that's like the traditional set of way you play the games. But what he doesn't realize is he's not looking up, and he should have been looking up all along. And the Proctors are rigging the system, and they're rigging the games in order for the Archgovernor's son to win. And once he realizes that, and realize after he's mortally stabbed to death, but is saved by Mustang, it's this moment of, oh, I even forgot myself and I forgot my mission. I was acting like a gold. I need to act like a red in a gold's body. I need to start using my brain and using how my experience to rig this game. Because is there a way for me to not play the game you want me to play?
Right. He essentially realizes there's no such thing as fair. Right. And though it's a arena of 16, 17, 18 year olds, like, there's still someone outside who's deciding. So like, there's always someone above you, no matter what an even playing field it looks like. And when he realizes that is when things change, and it got really interesting and even more violent.
But yes, but it's so good because he's not really the person who realizes that. It's Mustang who shows him that you can change how the game is played.
Well, and Ares kind of helps him too.
Right.
Dropping like, hints.
You don't have to approach this the way they're telling you to approach it. You can change the paradigm and play by different rules. Yep. And that's how he ends up ultimately winning the game. Now that we mentioned Mustang, I do kind of want to segue into some of the book's treatment of women.
Not written by a girl.
Yes, there is very much sexism in this book to the degree. For the most part, I thought it was fine because the point of like the sexual assaults is that this is how golds treat pinks, and their overlords basically want them to understand that if they don't have power, then they can become a pink. So I'm like, fine. I understand that that's what, you know, the people who put together the Institute want these children to understand. But there are comments in the book like, oh, like, you run like a girl, or, oh, go talk to the girls because you're not a strong fighter. And I was like,
and Mustang cedes her power to him in the end, even though she is by far the smartest person on the playing field.
She's the smartest person, and he doesn't have a standard. All of the slaves are under Minerva.
No, she's the entire reason that he gets to the end. And, you know, maybe in book two, we'll figure out Mustang's actually the hero all along, but
I doubt it.
Somehow. Yeah, it's like simultaneously kind of icky, but also at the same time, a really good commentary on society still.
Yeah, I do think like thinking back on the book, I don't know if this book passes the Bechdel test.
It does not, which is what I was about to say. The only meaningful female character is the main character's love interest.
Yep.
Which okay, is if
she, okay, let's talk about at the end, he thought she betrayed him. And I was like, yes, please. Yes, this is amazing. This is like a rivalry for the whole rest of the series. Like, I thought it was going to be the greatest plot twist ever. And I should have known she didn't actually betray him. She just did what he wanted.
She betrays her brother.
I know.
Ultimately, just a male fantasy.
Yeah. I wanted her to be the villain.
I know, me too.
Most powerful, most gorgeous woman who's been by his side the whole time. She's loyal.
Meanwhile, my female fantasy is for her to be the villain.
Yes. Yeah, for her to fucking knife him through the throat. Knife your brother and knife him.
Yeah, and claim all of the power.
But I do want to say, I have noticed this multiple times with male authors, and it really irks me. And it wasn't bad enough in this book that it knocked me down star points, but I just want to note it. That when men write fantasy, they think having one powerful female in the book checks the box and that that is enough. There should be just as many fully fleshed out, powerful, influential women in your books as there are men. And they should not all be mentioned just because they're fucking one of the main character's friends. And this book is totally guilty of that. If this is the super powerful, influential fight to the death games, there should have been just as many female influential characters. Well,
then you do get who you think is going to be a power struggle with Antonia in the House Aries or House Mars.
And she
But she gets crucified because she is actually just a terrible human being, just like many of the others, but slightly worse. So, like, that's not girl power.
No. And one of the other leaders of the other houses, not Mustang, but the other one, the bread baking house.
Cersei. Oh, Ceres.
Ceres.
Yeah. They just, like, don't get the same, like, epic ends that the men do. Like, it's just not written. And I found that very annoying.
Yeah. The girl leader of House Diana was just, like, chopped off her horse.
Right. And it just felt like men always got the upper hand on the women in the book. Yeah.
I will say, sad. The saddest demise of any character was Pax.
Yes.
I was Pax. My bumbling mountain of an oaf. I loved him.
I know.
He did get a good end, but I was like, no.
I know. It was so devastating.
But like the women didn't get that. They didn't get that. Like,
I'm so confused. Why was Pax in Minerva, which is the goddess of wisdom's group? Because he had no intelligence, no brains.
I guess she just took him because he was obviously going to be like an amazing fighter. She was like, fine, I'll have this oaf in my house. Why not?
She's smart enough to pick someone who's going to help her leaders, you know?
Right.
Sure.
And he was a good little follower. I'll say that. He's
a good little follower.
Little. Okay.
Yeah. Good gigantic follower. Yeah. But yeah, I'm just so mad that the women, I feel like, did not get the same epic treatment that the men did. The same epic deaths, the same epic strategy that was written out.
And I almost wish that Mustang and him never got together.
Yeah, I kind of do too. But I still liked it, but I could have seen a different path too.
It was like a light romance too. They never like consummated, I don't think. You know,
they just had really steamy makeout.
Yeah. Because
he's still in love with EO.
Which is fair. Like, why are you snogging your...
Well, if you think about it, it has been like over a year.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And they've gone through this super intense experience together, and neither of them would have made it out alive without the other.
I'm very curious to see if she knows he's a red and if she's part of the revolution, because she was singing EO's song in that cave. Mm-hmm. And she like was like, you kept saying EO in the cave. I'm like, I feel like she would know. If you know her song, you would know her name.
I mean, she might not necessarily know EO's name because they only saw it through a hack. So I'm sure, like, the society...
I don't think they were lower thirds.
Right. Yeah, like, they weren't making them, like, Googleable, I don't think. But I did wonder about her. I don't think she's a red, but
no.
She basically helps Darrow essentially invent democracy, like, in the games.
She's clearly jaded by something her father and brother have done and wants no part in it.
And the fact that her father is rigging the games in favor of her brother and not her, when she's obviously the smarter and I think stronger of the two.
Right. Like, she's been shafted. Okay, but
when her brother saw his own handoff, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, you truly are a jackal. Jesus.
That's Christ. The only time in the book I genuinely wanted to punch Darrow in the face. I was like, just kill him, you asshole. You don't need to get this symbolic win. Just kill him.
Like, you are really dumb for letting him
saw his own handoff.
Saw his handoff and leave.
And let me just tell you, Mustang would never. She would have known what to do.
Mm-hmm. She did know what to do, though. She walked in and still let him say, okay, I'll talk to you later, and left.
When she knew it was her brother, that was, yeah. I did not expect her to be the arch-governor's daughter.
I didn't either. Okay, well, as much as I did love Mustang, I want to say that I think my favorite character in the book is Sevro. Like,
yes, yeah.
Sevro, and who was the poet guy who we thought Rogue. Died and didn't?
Rogue.
I liked him a lot.
I'm so glad he was alive.
But Sevro, yes. When you find out he's the praetor's son, you're like, ah, shit. And that he killed Priam, which I kind of guessed.
Yeah, that was
But you're like, ooh, snap. Like, even the golds don't actually know what's in within their ranks.
But right. Also the fact that he is literally like a wolf boy.
He's literally like crawling out of dead animal carcasses.
Yeah.
Pretending to be a wolf pack leader. Like, what the fuck are you?
It was epic. Epic. It was.
But I thought it was also great commentary. I mean, because he was treated like shit, even though he was one of the most competent members of the crew. But also that they managed to win by elevating the people in their group that were considered
the least
powerful, and taught them to have power and taught them these skills that made them the most powerful unit in the group. Like,
because they were loyal.
Right. And also they fought differently. You know, like, everything the golds thought is super massive.
They got their hands dirty.
Super power, like, hungry, power forward. Like, only the biggest can be the best fighters, which is ironic because then everyone in the book who wins and is, like, the most fearsome is because they fight with their mind and they fight through strategy.
Well, they're not
so funny and should have been
dueling.
Yeah. Silly dueling like Cassius.
Yes.
But also, it should have been a sign that the biggest bully who turned out to be a softie was named Pax, which is Latin for peace.
Yeah, that's funny. That is, I also found it interesting because the House of Mars is Aries in Roman form, and he ends up in Mars' house.
Right. Yes. Also, it fits just because of, like, the rage and the
rest. His rage, yeah.
Yeah.
And how they're like, yeah, this house never wins because they always just turn in on themselves. And
like,
they,
that, like, makes sense.
Know that and still draft these kids thinking they'll be the best of their house, you know?
It is so hilarious to me that they basically sacrifice half the Mars kids just because they know that they're not actually equipped to, like, lead well. Then they're just going to, like, implode on themselves. And then the other houses are going to have to figure out.
It makes you wonder how both Cassius and his brother ended up in Mars.
Yeah.
That is very true.
I'm guessing that their father was in Mars' house, because didn't they say
that? But Mars never wins and their father won.
Oh.
True. Fascinating stuff. Maybe Cassius isn't daddy's little boy as much as he thinks he is.
I don't know. He's kind of a prick, so.
The prick.
Yeah. Again, one thing I really did appreciate about this book is I feel like, appropriately represented that whole, like, honor perspective, which always really triggers me in, like, male written media. Like, Game of Thrones kind of does this a little too much with, like,
Jon Snow,
who I fucking hate, where they're so worried about, like, doing the right thing and being honorable that they just, like, are pussies. Like, they just
and they get their hearts ripped out.
I didn't dislike Cassius, but he's a prick.
I dislike
that whole honor code is just such bullshit. Like, in a society
that holding a grudge that you killed his brother despite knowing his brother was doomed to die is, like, that's realistic. Thank you.
Yeah. And it also is, like, I don't know. It's like, if it wasn't Darrow, it would have been someone else who did it, because
Julian was not killing anyone.
Mm-mm. Right. But it does make me wonder if Darrow being put with
purposeful. Absolutely.
Super purposeful. Because they knew that Cassius was the only person who could rival Darrow in that house. And so they had to make a grudge.
Yes. And I think they wanted Cassius to kill Darrow, which
what I want to know is if they knew Priam would die.
I bet they did not know that. Because I think that that was hubris. And they thought Sevro would not be able to win. All right. Wow. Okay, so the main student who's the big bad is the Jackal, who is actually also not that strong, not that like physically intimidating. He's sort of this skinny.
He says he prefers politics to combat.
He's a manipulator and a thinker, not a fighter, which makes him very powerful in the games. And he, like Darrow, sort of curates this like powerful, intimidating persona that precedes him and scares the other kids without them having actually like met him or interacted with him. What did you think of the Jackal? And what did you think about the games being rigged in his favor?
I thought there was going to be some big epic war scene between the two sides. And I was actually kind of happy that that's not what we got, that it was more complicated. Mm-hmm. Like I said, so savage for just staring Darrow in the eyes and cutting his own hand off. Wild. I don't know. Can golds give you new hands? Probably. I don't know.
Probably.
Even though they like enjoy being scarred to show they're the highest ranking, it's so bizarre. But yeah. I liked it. And I liked that his trickery was similar to Darrow's. So he like was masquerading as a weak person in another house and knew about the rings, had collected rings from fallen children from other houses, and it was just like playing this game. And Darrow figures it out because Darrow is smart, but he doesn't like figure it out all the way because he doesn't realize that he's Mustang's sister.
Yes.
Or brother.
I liked the Jackal as an opponent. Mm-hmm. And I like that he ends up being another person who's smart and not, you know, physically intimidating. I also think, so this is something this book gets really right, that The Will of the Many also gets really right, which is that most of the quote unquote top kids are actually pretty average and like, they're just privileged softies that have had their parents stick up for them their whole lives. So they're actually not that smart. They're actually not that tough. They're actually not that strong. So I liked that that was present in this book because the society has this whole charade about meritocracy and that the strongest will survive, when in actuality, which is the same as Will of the Many, there are rich, powerful people behind the scenes pulling the strings to make sure that their children come out on top and reinforce the hierarchy.
But it was also interesting because even though the games were rigged, there were moments where he almost lost. And they say that he gets trapped in a cave and he has to make the decision to sacrifice his entire clan in order to survive by creating an avalanche so that he doesn't get enslaved. And so he's smart enough on his own merit, but at the same time, like, he would not have survived as long as he did without the help of his daddy and being bribed proctors.
And eating children.
And eating children. The fact that he admitted to cannibalism is crazy.
But it was like such a perfect metaphor for how golds get in power.
Cannibalizing.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. My favorite part.
Why do we always end up with cannibalism?
So true.
We do read a lot of cannibalism.
Why is that in? That's in more books than it should be, quite frankly.
Yes.
Okay. So my personal favorite plot twist that I did not see coming was that Darrow ends up fighting the Proctors, and they raid Olympus and tie down or defeat all of the Proctors in order to basically make a point. And they do that so that they don't kill Darrow, because they are going to kill him because they're trying to rig the game for the Jackal. So he needs them out of the way to properly confront the Jackal. And then he also wants to make a point about their influence in the games. So yeah, what did you guys think of them doing that?
Well, I didn't
expect Darrow's like secret third option of a tribe made up of all the slaves of other houses.
I kind of figured that was coming.
Yeah, that was genius. And the fact that you can earn your freedom through raiding other houses, and then also him taking the lashes because he learned from his experience from killing Titus that like you can't,
all for genius. Yeah,
you can't like instill like hope and trust unless you're the one taking the beating. And so him taking the lashes, and he's like, I'm used to this. I experience this on a daily basis, like down in the Reds, like these golds would never experience this. I thought that was so interesting. And then also the fact that Olympus, like, I didn't expect it when he, because he punched the Mars Proctor and like locks him up. And I was like, why are you locking him up? And then I forgot.
No. He talked boots. About something weird about coverings on his boots. I was like, oh,
yes.
Shit.
I didn't even process that. And I caught like, oh, that. Shit.
And I also caught the belt, the like whatever belt thing, the shield that it penetrates them. And he was like, oh, if they're touching you, they have to have the belt off. And then.
That's yeah, when he killed Apollo, I was like, oh,
yeah, I was like,
well, and then you realize that once again, it's another layer of hierarchy. The Praetors are playing their own game, trying to change their station within the Golds. And like by their houses winning and things, they get better jobs, but also they're being manipulated by the people above them.
Right. So at the end of the day, it's all one continuing game because the Proctors are also using it to climb within their houses.
Yeah. The question is who's really in charge?
Yeah.
Really number one on this continuous chain.
Right. We don't really know. Okay. So the very, very end, the games are over. Darrow is the winner. Everyone, you know, this sort of like reality that these kids are in, which is sort of crazy because no adults come to help them, and so this game becomes their reality even though they know like the real world is still outside.
And, like, the medbot saves some people but not all of them.
Nope. So ultimately at the end, Darrow becomes this lancer, like basically like officially adopted child that's going to represent his enemy's house. This is the man who is basically responsible for Io's death.
And the nemesis of Cassius's family.
So that is definitely going to be a showdown that continues.
The same man that rigged the games.
He realizes as the governor that his only recourse for Darrow to not show the manipulation he's been doing is like offering him this bribe. And Darrow's like, this is exactly what I wanted. I think Darrow says he made some edits to what Severo did to the film. And I think Darrow pulled out the stuff about that on purpose so that he could leverage this bargain and had a plan to work for the arch governor all along. It's just further complicated now that he's like, oh, hey, this is Mustang's dad. This is awkward.
Well, right. I guess I was confused about the edits because I thought they sent them to the drafters before he like was offered the job.
He did. But so what they saw, like he talked about Severo made the edits and he said, I only had a few changes to make. So I think what he took out was actually the part where he reveals that the governor is behind all of it.
Mm.
And that's
and so the governor thinks that no one knows about this except for him. But little does he know, all the other kids know.
Yeah. Okay, right. That makes sense. I guess that didn't like track. So I was like, well, didn't they tell the drafters and reveal at all that it was the governor's like master plan and like stuff like that? But no, okay, that makes sense. And also, it's very interesting to see how Severo and the rest of them and his little cult go outside of the games.
Yes.
Will they forget all about this, or will this bond them even closer? And will this create kind of his own cult within the Golds that will help him overturn the Golds?
One little one-eyed Severo has like sworn himself to him. So like, there's all the power right there.
Also, my favorite other little twist, does Severo know that he's a Red?
Severo knows because he says,
because Severo hears him say bloody damn and edits it out and basically tells him that he edits it out.
And I don't think he cares.
He doesn't.
Well, several of all the Golds would understand.
Because he's a pixie, I think, or something.
Because he's...
Bronzer.
Bronzer.
He's better than everyone else, but he gets treated like shit because he doesn't have, like, the height, the stature, the beauty of the other Golds.
Just like his dad.
Right.
Who is in the same position, grasping for power by being Praetor.
Right. But that's as high as he can rise because he's ugly and hasn't caved and totally
but he realizes his son can rise higher on the tails of Darrow.
Yes,
exactly,
because Darrow is the first kid to overtake Olympus.
But it is sweet that he's like, I'm worried you're gonna get my son killed with your ambition.
Yeah,
right,
which is a very fair worry.
Yeah, and it's a sweet moment.
Mm-hmm.
I also like, okay, because this is something that bothered me about Silverly, and I just wanted to talk about it and address it in this book because this book does it the right way, where Garrow has sympathy for the Gold Kids and understands that some of them are decent people. They're just made to be this way and brainwashed to believe society is supposed to be this way. But he still wants to hold them accountable and does not totally, like, sacrifice his goals and never stops thinking about his family back home, as he can acknowledge that they're complex people too. He stays true to the idea that this society must go down and anyone in my way will go down with it.
Yeah. Well, because it further complicates it, because he's now more gold than he is red, because his body has been entirely remade. Like, he can never go back to where he was. Like, so he has to reckon with the fact that he is no longer really Darrow anymore. He is a gold through and through. Mm-hmm. And so he has to abolish a system that is favorable to him now.
Right.
And I don't ever see him choosing Mustang or whatever her real name is, Victoria or whatever, over his mission.
Yeah.
Right. I never see that happening. Like, that is the character we have been given. I mean, maybe it will complicate things, but I don't really see him ever saying, like, his one true love, his first love, is gone. Mm-hmm. So he might find love again, but I don't ever think he's going to choose love over his people as a whole.
I think more likely than not, Mustang will join him.
Yeah.
But that's his
hesitancy. I want her to be the villain.
But I do
want that. I know. But I think that's part of his hesitancy. It's just she can't really know him because she doesn't know that he's a red. And so their relationship, no matter how far it progresses, will always be built on a lie. And he has to know, like, ultimately, at the end of the day, he can't ever really fall in love with someone that's not going to join him on this cause. And, you know, maybe Mustang eventually will, or maybe he'll have to kill her in the end.
I just love that, and like, at the end of all of this, his symbol of power is his mining tool.
Yes.
Yeah.
It did. It was like, it's everything so this good. Book is perfectly circular, and it's so satisfying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it.
Wow. God, I love this book.
It's so good.
Oh, good.
So excited for the next book.
Do we do the next book? Let us know.
Please. I really want
to. Because we're all going to end up reading it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should just do it. We should just force people to come on this journey with us.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get more boy listeners.
Oh, my God. Men.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me? Oh, we can bring Jacob on.
Aw. Our first male guest. Ew.
Ew. We love all the girls, the boys, the gays. We love everyone. You're all welcome, even though it's the Busy Girls Book Club. We're the girls. You don't have to be.
Okay. Well, do you guys have book recommendations?
Oh my God, I didn't even think.
I am going to recommend The Fifth Season, and I'm stealing it.
Good one.
That's the other just iconic.
Well, then I have dibs on The Will of the Money.
I was going to recommend The Will of the Money.
That's the next dibs. You have to find a new one.
Fuck.
Hey, I'm the one who found that book.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. You're right. Let's go with Project Hail Mary.
Okay. Space
sci-fi with the best character on the planet.
True.
On the planet, you mean
in the universe?
All right. Well, these are just our opinions. We hope you guys had a good time listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed the book as much as we do. But no matter what, we'd love to hear from you. So please rate and review the podcast 5 stars. And if you want to engage some more with us, you can find us pretty much everywhere on the internet at Busy Girls Pod. So I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.